Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and oh my, what an exciting paradigm shifter we have today who is going to talk to us about her new book and also about the fifth world, which is the consciousness phase our human species is going into, which means it had to attract or it had to birth children that are going to fit into the fifth world. So, welcome our world famous explorer of consciousness as it goes through our species, PMH Atwater. I'm very honored to have you on our radio show.
Well, it's fun to be here.
And children of the fifth world, I must tell you, it kind of frightened me in a way.
Well, you know, if you're going to look at the truth of what is happening now, then you're going to look at the good, the bad, and the in-between.
Right.
So don't get stuck on that which seems, you know, uncomfortable. All you have to do is pick up the newspaper, you know, turn on your TV. You're going to get uncomfortable, but you're also going to get thrilled. So that's our new kids. They're both challenging us and scaring us. Maybe that's what children have always done with their parents in ages past. Maybe that's what you know, has always been true as the earth changes and evolves. Certainly, you know, we get it kind of in our ruts, or we get these ideas of the way things are, and we
the
get
way a
kind of
perfect child
comfortable.
has to be, yes.
Yeah, and then up goes, you know, the foot on the fanny, and we're startled into realizing, hey, the world doesn't work the same way it used to.
No, really. How did you get started in this kind of a journey? Is this your 12th book? Is that what I read? Yeah.
I've lost count. I really have.
Oh, it says here.
I don't know how many books I've written.
Well, your expertise includes our relationship to indigo children and these other terms that have been kind of flushing up over the last 20 years, eh?
Well, one of the things I want to do right now, up front, is to invite everyone to take terms like indigo, crystal, star seed, cosmic, rainbow, psychic, all these labels that we use to identify our children and toss them out the door.
Oh
They
my.
are all misleading. They are all exaggerated. None of them speak to what is really happening with today's children. If you want to have some way of understanding the fuller aspect of what's going on, then you need to go further back in esoteric tradition and pick up terms like root races, ROOT, root races. The more common versions of root races is you find that in theosophy, or you find that in the Edgar Cayce readings, both of them.
Okay.
Theosophy was very detailed. They go back in time, let's see what, about 18 million years ago. That's when they say spirit first entered matter on the earth plane, hence the first root race.
Well, is a root race kind of talking about the style of being that's coming forward in
What they're
each other?
talking about, when we're talking about root races or the idea of root for the race, is the basic gene pool or DNA gene pool of the human family. So you're talking genetics.
Okay.
And that's how we can best understand what's happening now, is to take a look at genetics, how we understand genetics, and our appreciation of the idea of evolution, that our brains are changing, our nervous system is changing. Let's take a look at that from a larger perspective. And when you do, you know, I can only speak for myself here and say my mind was blown. You know, when you take a look at the larger picture, then you realize not only are we evolving and changing, but the way that is change the way that is occurring in the human family, that's what's startling.
Hmm. Is it happening very, very fast right now because of the kind of boiling
culture? Well, certainly.
Culture?
Certainly. The fifth root race is moving into ascendancy. By that I mean the fifth root race, that's where we are now. Mm-hmm. That's how I would identify the kids. They're part of this new evolutionary thrust, and I would call that the fifth root race. They've been around for a while. Fifth root race has been around for a while. Let me give you a quick idea here, what I mean by that.
Okay.
You can trace these kind of brilliant, intelligent, kind of quirky, creative, highly intuitive people, and that's what fifth root racers are. They're very much into mass communication and innovation and turning governments upside down. That's their specialty. You can trace them back to the time of Jesus.
But I was born in 43, and I think I'm one of those. And
well,
I'm, my partner
wait a minute.
Is.
Let me go a little further here.
Mm-hmm.
You can trace them back to the time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. There weren't that many, but there were a few. All of the renaissances the world has ever known has had clusters and waves of them come in.
Wonderful.
I mean, what do you think ever started the Renaissance to begin with? And then we had huge movement of them coming in the 1800s, especially from 1840 on. That's the New Thought movement.
Right on.
All of your people like Thoreau and Emerson, those are all fifth root race people. So yes, indeed, your great aunt Tilly was probably of the fifth root race.
Wow.
Indeed so. Your grandmother, yourself, you know, going far back. But, you know,
so
in my
kind of
research, I was able to really, really tune in to when the floodgates opened.
Hmm.
And those floodgates opened wide about 1982.
Hmm.
From then on, what we're getting is the fifth root race, period, end of story, globally.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about what they're like. Like, are they unstable? Are they angry? Are they insecure? Are they sort of addicted to electronics?
Well, let's look at some of the positives.
Okay.
Then let's look at some of the negatives.
Okay.
On the positive side, these kids are intelligent. Even if they're flunking and can't spell,
mm-hmm.
these kids are really intelligent. About one-third of them are geniuses, even if learning disabled. I'm talking autism here.
Okay.
Even if they take the Raven's test, which tests fluid intelligence, those kids, learning disordered or autism, who take the Raven's test, about one-third of them test out 150 to 160 or higher. This is what we're seeing globally with all the kids. One-third are testing out on standard IQ tests, even the Wechsler test, about 150 to 160 and higher.
Hmm.
They're very musically oriented. Of course, any human being is, but even more so. They're very rhythmic. They're unusually creative. They're very spiritually minded. They're intuitive. They're psychic. Many remember past lives.
Hmm.
They're excellent with math. Don't let them fool you about this. They're natural-born healers. They're ready-to-go entrepreneurs. They're irreverent. They're quirky.
Irreverent.
they have unique beliefs. They're visionary problem solvers. They're very knowing. They're volunteer-minded. They're humanitarians. I swear from the time they can first talk, they're thinking about someone else and how they can help them. You know, we've got these four-year-olds and five-year-olds that go across their neighborhood and you know, their birthday money and their Christmas money, and they're using that money to buy or build or make water wells in Africa. You know, these kids are very, very humanitarian, but they're groupies, and they move as if a collective, almost as if there was a group mind. They often attend night school in addition to dreaming. You know, got to warn parents here. They abstract at very young ages. They're spatial learners. Now, let's just hang there a minute, because school curriculums are all made out for verbal learn 80% of your school curriculums are made out for verbal learners. With these kids, 80% are spatial learners. They're bored out of their tree in school.
What is a spatial learner?
A spatial learner is going to learn most by what they can see, pictures, dramas, getting out and do it themselves, very creative, what comes in their mind, being able to take that and then express that. So they're working with abstractions and concepts and spaces. They're not working with sound per se, that is to say words. They're not working that much on that level, but they want to see the pictures, the abstracts. These kids, this is the first generation since 1982, specifically that year, 1982, first generation in all history, to get that their first view of the world is through a screen.
Right.
So of course they're spatial. That's their first view is through a screen, not out the door like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
A fusion of sexes and gender mixing. I mean, hey, look what's happening there.
Mm-hmm.
They're multisensory, multi-channelers who live in a multiverse. If you want to look at the negatives, they're impatient, impulsive. They feel entitled. Many of them are overconfident. They're the ultimate consumer. There is an underlying anger in them. I don't care how nice they are. There's an underlying anger. By that I mean little tolerance for lies and manipulations. They just can't handle it. They prefer astral and synthetic worlds to the real world. They're highly sensitive to drugs, snack foods, processed foods, and incoherent electronic energy, which is most of your digital world. They do not assimilate nutrition well. They have no concept of authority. They need mentors, not bosses. They appear wiser than they are. Self-deception is a huge issue.
Oh, really?
They are very sensitive to trickster energy. By that I mean psychic attachments, possession, all this kind of stuff. They do not understand the effort needed to process or refine, like, why should I go to college to learn this when I already know it? Why should I have a degree? They don't understand the degree process or the refinement process. They expect things to come to them. They do not recognize boundaries, even that of skin. Clothes are often more important than language skills. Their greatest fear, dear, is silence. So, you know, these are challenging kids. They're just not going to move in line like kids of the past and march to various orders. They're going to hack. They're going to invade. They're going to challenge. They're going to yell at you. They're not going to cooperate.
What about drugs and alcohol? Will they fall prey?
Well, sure. That's, you know, sex, drugs, and money. It's in the book. I have a whole chapter, headings on it. Of course. You know, they don't have the same concept of sex that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a couple of years ago, I think it was, wasn't Emily Couric, Katie Couric. Mm-hmm. I used to know Emily before she passed away. She wasn't a neighbor, but she's a very, very good friend. And of course, Emily was Katie Couric's sister.
Mm.
Katie did a study on this about sex in junior high and high school. And it was a documentary on television. And she found that about, I think it was around 46% were bisexual.
Wow, that's high. Wow.
It's very high. Mm-hmm. It's very high. So they don't look at sex like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't look at clothes like we do. You know, I'm sorry my age is showing here, but I look at all the styles and I call them porn clothes.
Yeah, they are, really. Yeah.
They show as much flesh as possible, especially girls.
And they're not sensual. They're just straight up.
It's just straight up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was 2 years ago, I was in Moscow, Russia. I thought I was just here, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm in Moscow, Russia. I'm there to give some talks and such. So I'm in downtown Moscow. I'm walking around, and it's like noonish. So a lot of people are on the streets. And the gals, they don't care what's showing. I mean, you know, tiny little skirts and, you know, high heels. And this is downtown, you know, business district. And the blouse is wide open, gauze-like. They literally don't care what's showing. And I thought, this is everywhere. Uh-huh. You know, I thought it was just in the United States. It's everywhere.
Do you think that's a reflection of the fact our sexuality is very, very different in species like that? It's bisexual.
You know, we're much more open. Yeah, more bisexual,
more
unisex. We're more open in talking about this. And, of course, the kids see it on TV all the time.
Mm-hmm, I know.
And your commercials. Even the Christian channels. Have, you know, I mean, it's everywhere. So this is what they see and this is what they emulate.
So that whole unit, I mean, relationships are changing, and the marriage basis and the one-on-one, that's changing radically, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, about, let's see, what is it? I want to get this correct. About one-third have no sense of living a full life. You know, they don't even look at destiny or mission or the idea of what am I going to do when I grow up. They don't look at that like we do. Of course, a lot of that has to do now with our economy, mm-hmm. and the fact that these new kids, you know, really did get screwed. They really did. So I think we could use that term.
Because we don't have the foundation.
We don't have jobs for them.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. they're going, a few of them are going to college. They're spending like what, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. They come out of college, you know, excited and determined and ready to go, and no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they wind up working at Burger King.
Frustrating. And then people are so depressed about it themselves, so they must be picking that up as well.
Well, and two-thirds have no intention of ever marrying, ever going to college, or ever becoming a parent.
Isn't that interesting?
So it's a whole different way of looking at the world, and it's not just in the United States. I'm not just talking about here.
Hmm.
These are very different children. These are children and young adults who look at the world very differently than other generations. Certainly the genetics are changing, but I'm just pointing out the way that they're looking at the world itself and their place in it. And they're not seeing the kind of thrill, the kind of challenge, the kind of uplift that previous generations saw.
Mm.
So instead, they're going full bore into the side trips of, you know, sex and drugs or the digital age.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly they're excelling with the digital age and the electronic devices and this kind of thing. But, you know, they're running into quicksand. And that quicksand is that we're losing emotions, we're losing language.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, if everything is digital, you know, if you want to break up with someone, you just text them, bye, you know, see you later, it's over. The person on the other end is just shocked, stunned. There's no talking it out. There's no discussion. There's no tears. They're growing up without the ability to recognize emotion in people's faces and in their voices.
Hmm.
Because, you know, where would they get that from?
That's funny, because I was talking about old movies, how the poignant You know, the edits were much farther apart in old movies, and it was a lot about the expressions on the different actors' places. And they don't do that anymore, and now it's really fast edits and lots of drama and change, right?
Well, a lot of startles, you know. That's the math here, because the brain can only take so much of radiant light. It can only, it can't take too much of radiant light, or it goes to sleep.
It goes into a trance kind of thing.
Sit down and you're watching television, if it's not really, really exciting, and if things don't shake you up, then the next thing you know, you're asleep. So the contracts of the sponsors with the show producers, those contracts demand and state how many startles per, let's say, 5 minutes or so, and the sponsor will say and demand how many startles per, and it's literally in the contract, and the purpose of the startle or something very sudden that happens or shakes you up or rattles you or somehow bothers you. The purpose of the startle certainly is to wake you up, but with our bodies made the way that we are, it produces cortisol. And that's the stress, so we get all stressed out. Adults, I think, can handle this to a point, but the kids, and the greatest startle effect of them all, according to these contracts, is violence. To keep you awake. And the kids have trouble sleeping. They start getting stressed out. Parents don't know why. It's the startle effect on TV.
But doesn't that also increase their sexual activity? Like, doesn't it
Sure, especially boys. You betcha.
So we got a really crazy thing going on, and
it's no wonder the kids are crazy.
Exactly.
Like the world is crazy.
But why can't I wanted to know something from you, which is that the whole thing about Asperger's, autism, nervous breakdowns, depression, all of that stuff, the brain. I just keep thinking it's so interesting what's happening with the brain these days. Do you think that's an example of our evolution as a species, or are we just being destroyed?
Well, let's admit it. Technology is outpacing biology.
Right.
I mean, that's what's happening. So we need to find... We're not going to stop it. So we need to find ways of somehow
balancing.
Working with this and balancing it. We have to find balance. For these kids that are really challenged, I want to recommend to all of your listeners the book called Kids Beyond Limits.
Okay.
It has a very, very long secondary title, so I'm not going to give you that. Kids Beyond Limits. It's by Annette Banel. Annette is A-N-A-T. Banel is B-A-N-I-E-L.
Okay.
You want to get the book, Annette Kids Beyond Limits. She has found and developed a way of working with troubled children, children who are having brain problems, autism, so forth and so on, in talking, exercising, touching, sound, temperature, different kinds of things, that is able to get in very deeply into their brains and turn them around. I don't know how old you are, dear, but when I was a youngster, the biggie was polio. Polio was dropping people like flies, and I was one of them. I had polio at the age of 4.
Oh my gosh.
I had a mild version. But the big thing then was Sister Kenny. I don't know if you remember Sister Kenny.
She came
out of Australia. Now, the doctors were taking the hardline approach, and they were strapping up people who were crippled, with polio in braces and, you know, iron and steel.
Yeah, I remember that and the iron
lung.
Yeah,
and Sister Kenny came. She didn't have any degrees.
Okay.
But she had common sense. And she said, take exercise, hot towels, do this, do that, do this, the natural way, and you'll return full function or nearly full function. She did it year after year, hundreds, thousands of people. The medical community never accepted her procedures.
No, really.
Sister Kenny. Okay, Annette Bunnell, as far as I'm concerned, is another Sister Kenny.
Okay, well, look into her.
Yeah, she's coming up from the ground saying, wait a minute, there's another way to handle autism. There's another way to handle Asperger's, you know. There's another way to do this. And we can turn this around.
Even ADD and ADHD
She's
and all
just
of those.
Doing incredible stuff.
Oh, I'm going to really look her up.
Yeah,
that's
you've
got to
look up Annette Bunnell. So get her on your show.
Yeah, I
tell her I recommended her.
I will indeed.
Oh, her book is just so so exciting.
But is it? Let me just go back to this question about technology. Is it true? I mean, I believe this, that through the centuries, we've learned to evolve or mutate ourselves in order to cope with dire
right.
circumstances, right? Is that what's going on with the
brain
popping?
And we're going to have to do it again, and we are.
Okay.
We are doing it again. One of the ways I believe that you can do this in a more balanced way, and the cutoff date is cutoff time is puberty.
Okay.
If you take these little ones, no exposure at all until they're almost three.
Okay.
So no television, nothing. And I say to parents, haven't you ever heard of radio? You know, I mean, you can use radio for your music and your background sounds. Turn the TV off and get them, you know, up to the age of maybe 2.5, 3. And then you can start exposing them to the digital world, but do it little by little by little, you know, in, you know, so many hours, maybe so many days. And as they get older, just increase that slowly but surely, up until the age of puberty. And if you do that, then most of them after puberty will be able to handle digital devices and the digital world in a more balanced, healthy way.
Mm.
They did a huge study in England and found this to be true, and they were researching abstraction, or the ability to abstract, you know, work on the conceptual level. Remember, that's these kids' greatest gift.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's light years ahead of, you know, the common person in the past.
In the 40s, when I was raised.
Yeah, the ability to abstract.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these kids are coming in that way.
So what about baby Einstein? Didn't I read in this book that those early childhood tapes and CDs and so on weren't a good idea?
No, they don't work.
Do they just
don't
stress
work like we thought they would?
But do they stress the children? They do, don't they?
A lot of times they do. Yeah.
And what do you do if a child is already 6 or 8 and has been steeped in TV?
Oh, that's a big one, and I'm not a counselor, a child counselor, to be able to give you a really good answer. But that kind of answer I would give is, out the door, we're growing a garden.
Oh, okay.
They're going to get their hands in the dirt.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're going to work with the rhythms of the earth and the seasons. I will also be teaching them how to clean out a bathroom, how to clean out a sink, how to vacuum. I will also be teaching them sewing, mm-hmm. and cooking, especially making cookies with your hands and food sculpture. You see, you've got to get them back into feeling,
mm-hmm.
and using those hands, feeling, using the body.
And with real living things like the dirt or the cookie dough or the vegetables.
Certain types of exercises. Mm-hmm. And the dirt is so healing. Mm-hmm. Dirt and sand, So, and those are incredible anecdotes, problem solvers. Also, if you can get them into clay, mm-hmm. Where they're making a pot on a potter's wheel, you know, they've got all that wet clay and they're just slapping a pot on a potter's wheel. Did you know that soil, especially clay, will draw out negativity from the human body?
Wow. That's great. Well, I guess we have clay masks, don't we? And
yeah.
Clay healing things, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and none of these things cost hardly anything. And another thing that works magic is if you can get in the schools, talk them somehow into teaching philosophy mm-hmm. by the third grade.
Yeah, I was reading that. How do you teach kids philosophy? I guess it's not that hard, eh?
Well, there's a book I recommend in my book. It's called, what's the name of it? Little Big Minds.
Okay.
By Margareta, I forget her last name, McCarty. Little Big Minds. And it'll tell you how to start teaching philosophy because the kids need it.
Right.
I mean, they're exposed to life and death. They're exposed to gangs and all this kind of stuff. They need to get into philosophy so they can start talking.
So that's kind of got an embedded morality to it, doesn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it helps the children to talk about what's going on and what they're seeing, what they're feeling, especially on TV or maybe in their block, mm-hmm. maybe on the school bus, maybe at school, what they're actually seeing, and also class chords. These kids are better at policing themselves than any teacher.
Oh, really?
Much better.
They seem to be good at negotiating. You said class court, and I go, oh, yeah, some of them
I
know.
Oh, they're good at negotiating.
Wow.
Really good at that. Listen to these kids. Engage them in conversation. Negotiate. Barter. They're good at it.
I love that, bartering.
Home,
bartering. Make it a deal. Huh?
Yeah, anybody's home, always have your, what do we call it? Where we meet at least once a month as a family, sometimes once a week. And you have the group all get together, and each person takes their turn griping, talking about whatever they want to talk about, saying whatever they want to say, questioning whatever they want to say. It goes all the way around. Then they discuss whatever needs to be discussed, and you vote. Always, always. You want something like that in every home. You want your own
family court, Judge
your
Judy.
Own, well, I don't think it's called family court, but
no, I know.
But it's something like that.
Yeah,
where you could call it the family council.
Sure, that would be.
Yeah,
better,
maybe that's a better word. Mm-hmm. But it's wonderful. It enables kids to get stuff off their chest. You see, I think this is one of the biggest problems. These kids need mentors, not bosses.
I like that. I really like that. You made me think about that as I read through this.
They need mentors, not bosses. And they're in a world now that is changing as fast as they are.
So the idea is to help them cultivate their power to meet the changes.
Right.
And to really be contributors.
So they can know themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise you're going to get kids that are over the cliff in darkness, drunkenness, drugs, you know, on and on and on. They have to express themselves. These are very creative kids.
Mm-hmm. They like animals too, don't they?
Yes. Yes. And have them be in charge of that animal. Mm-hmm. Have them be that steward or that guide or that caregiver. So absolutely. These kids need that responsibility, but they need to be able to voice. And you know, this whole new world that we're in called the fifth world, it truly is the fifth world. It's that world where just since 1982, mm-hmm. either has just been discovered or we finally accepted it, is the idea of, do you know? It has been identified. We have the fifth brain. There's four very specific sections to our brain. We now have a fifth one, and it's the heart. Most of the cells in the human heart, in anybody's heart, are neural cells. That is to say, the brain can think. It can go over and reach conclusions. Also know, we've been able to establish this, that the brain picks up what's going to happen to you before it happens. Maybe 20 seconds before, maybe 40 seconds before, maybe a couple of minutes before, your heart is literally your first responder. Hmm. It's your heart that tells your brain what's about to happen.
Hmm.
And we have five brainwave frequencies, not four. We used to think, you know, delta, theta, alpha, beta. There's five. The fifth one is gamma, which is high beta. We've got a lot of these kids operating in high beta or gamma, the gamma speeds. We've got the fifth dimension, which is more and more people are entering that now. That's free from time, space states, intention rules. In the fifth dimension, that's where the Akashic records are, you know, those records of the soul. The deep spirituality, that's all.
So they have immediate access to that, do they?
Many of them do.
Yeah.
Many of them do. I've got stories in the book about little kids going to music classes and then telling the teacher all about how they can go in and out of dimensions and in and out of worlds. And they say, you know, we can do this up to the age of seven. And then after seven, we start getting kind of dull like you adults are.
But they can actually verbalize that, right?
Oh, but yeah. Yeah. These kids, again, are abstracting. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by abstracting. I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
First one, 2.5-year-old Michaela. So she's 2.5.
Right.
You know what a 2.5-year-old kid is like.
Yes.
She's talking to her mother. They're having this discussion. Then Michaela gets angry. She puts her hands on her hips. She goes stomping up to her mother. She takes a finger and wags it in front of her mother's face, and she says, and I quote, "I don't know the word for that yet." Now, what 2.5-year-old can deal on the conceptual level and know they don't know the word for something? That is phenomenal.
It is phenomenal.
Let me give you another one. This is from my near-death work. You know, I'm one of the pioneers in the field of near-death studies. Began my work in 1978. I have 10 books on my findings. I have the largest resource base that we know, nearly 4,000 adult and child experiencers.
Did you have one?
I had three.
Oh, okay.
That's
great.
What got me into it in the first place. At 3 and 3 months. Anyway, from my research with child experiencers, this is a boy, 6 years old, first grade. He drowns about halfway through school. And they were able to resuscitate him, bring him back. Finally, he's well enough to be back in school. Now, stop and think for just a minute. What are they reading in first grade? See, spot, run. Dick and Jane. This boy comes back reading Greek mythology.
Oh, my gosh.
He goes up to his teacher And he says, and I quote, "Why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written?"
What an interesting...
That's abstracting.
Yeah, really. And it's a pretty interesting question, too.
That's abstracting.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about thinking outside the box. These kids never saw a box. They don't know anything about boxes. What they know is this impossibly, incredibly dynamic universe we live in. They don't understand limits. Remember? Mm-hmm. They don't recognize boundaries, not even that of skin.
So they can move through the death process more
easily.
They can
move through all kinds of processes with their ability to abstract. This is why so many parents say, "Oh, these kids are so wise." It's not wisdom. Wisdom takes time to really integrate and bring it into the heart, really feel it and know it. Abstraction is a talent. It's an ability.
Mm.
And these kids are coming in with the ability to abstract at very, very young ages. That is a huge deal. We've got five basic forces. You know, it used to be in physics and math, we'd talk about, well, electromagnetism, gravity, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. Those were the four, you know, those are the four basic forces in the universe. We now know there are five. The fifth one is torsion waves. And torsion waves can be influenced by consciousness. They pass through all shielding, and they're not weakened by distance. Torsion waves are the information carriers.
Hmm. So that's the energy force that we're breaking into. Yeah.
And the Russians call torsion waves biogravity. It's also called orgone, bioplasma, bioenergy. Some call it dark matter, dark energy. You know, this idea of crop circles, that's all torsion waves. And it just goes on and on. Our world is now very different.
Yeah, it is. And it's moving very, very fast, isn't it?
Almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a whole section here on how to help your kids become more proficient with their spiritual abilities or their philosophical or their multidimensional or their boundaryless abilities. Do you want to talk about that a little bit too? Because that's pretty
exciting.
Well,
I'm not quite sure what part of the book you're in right now.
Okay, I'm in the section where it's puzzled parents, and you're talking about...
Parenting. Ah!
And you're talking about all these different things like the influences, like the vaccinations and these kids having these perceptions, and parents really don't know how, a lot of people don't know how to respond to that in a way that helps them cultivate their
own.
First
response for parents, mm-hmm. Do not be shocked or upset by the psychic ability of your children.
Mm.
Take it in stride as natural and normal. That's big, 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 big. Please put it up in neon lights.
So you don't say, gee whiz.
And item number two, do not be upset by their ability to occasionally know the future. Be objective and detached. Don't be upset by your kids. Many of them are seeing ghosts. They're seeing disincarnates. Let me give you a little quickie from my own son.
Okay.
My son, when he was in, how old was he? Maybe ninth grade. And he was on his bike, and he was, I come from Boise, Idaho. So he was biking along up to Bora High School in Boise, Idaho. And he noticed this car of people. And they were sort of next to him, and then they kind of made a left turn. They went up kind of like a wee hill, and he was watching them, and they went up partway of up the hill, and they disappeared. The car disappeared. The people disappeared. I mean, poof, they were gone. And he's just shell-shocked. He's just coming home on his bike, and he's screaming. He says, Mom, I'm going crazy. And I said, sit down, let's talk about it. So he described everything, and I looked at him and smiled and said, honey, those people just slipped through a portal, a space portal. That's all they did. You know, this happens. You know, I was walking downtown Boise, Idaho streets, and I saw this woman disappear right in front of me. She went through a portal. I said, that's all it is. There are these portals, and people can go in and out. And you're okay. They're okay. Everything's fine. All you did was you were a witness to an anomaly in nature, and it's okay. So, you know, if you can be a parent like that or go to some kind of, like, psychic development school, take your kids with you, read some of these wonderful books like the ARE, the Association of Research and Enlightenment, based on the readings of Edgar Cayce, teaches, you know, wonderful things, really teaches you how to be healthy and happy and whole. When I say whole, I mean be all that you are, and everybody is psychic, so being all that you are is being intuitive and sensitive to all kinds of dimensions and degrees of energy. That's all it is. Let me give you a recommend for all of your listeners. You want to know about the Profound Awareness Institute. It is run by Nancy Baumgarten.
Okay.
Let me give you, let's see, I'm going to be giving you her email address. Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, little at sign, PsyKids, that's PSYKIDS .org. She runs this institute in North Carolina. She does summer trips. You can go there any time during the year. She works with schools. She works with teachers. She works with doctors. But especially she works with parents and kids.
Hmm.
Profound Awareness Institute. Oh, here's a phone number. 828-298-2592. Profound Awareness Institute. You might Google that if you want. I'm going to be talking about it, by the way, on my newsletter, which should go out the latter part of this week. I produce a free monthly newsletter, and you get it by getting on my website, www.pmhatwater.com. Just subscribe on my website, and you'll get it once a month. I'm not telling anybody what time of the month, because I give myself the permission to come out at any time.
When you're ready. I have to say this about this book and probably all of your books. It is such a wealth of cross-referencing and research and book titles, and I've been scribbling all the way through it. It's overwhelmingly rich. I will keep it around my desk all the time.
But, well, that's my job.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I'm a synergist.
It's wonderful. And also, all you were saying about teaching children spirituality, I think, is something we need these days.
Oh, we need our churches or our meditation groups or our yoga groups or, you know, just a block party
mm-hmm.
where the kids get together, maybe a parent or two. They're in a circle. They're praying. They're a healing prayer for others. You've got to have some kind of spiritual underpinning. Those kids who have a faith and are involved in some kind of faith work are the kids who for the most part, stay out of drugs, stay out of sexual problems. They're the kids who do the best in school and who are the happiest.
Well, also, you talked about teaching them philosophy at the first grades. But I'm looking at this section here, which is talking about how to lead them spiritually. And I notice when you're talking about like soul writing and writing their own stories, and it really helped me realize what a wonderful tool that is for self-empowerment, so they can respect themselves and be connected with all that is.
Oh, that's so important. Remember,
I love that.
We've got to listen to these kids and open the door for them to be able to express themselves
and to mind what they really are. You know, when they write that,
yeah,
they become more to themselves, even, don't they?
Right.
I don't mean in an ego way. I mean in an exploring way.
Well, yes, absolutely, and begin with money. Aha, caught you, didn't I?
Yes, you
begin
did.
Begin with money. 40% of anything they receive, whether it's a birthday gift, a Christmas gift, allowance, 40% goes into savings. They keep the passbook in their hands, in their room, not your room. 40% goes for whatever object or thing they want to save for. 10% goes in long-term savings, like retirement money someday, and the other 10% goes to the spiritual. It either goes to their church or whatever they consider to be spiritual or holy or sacred, even if it's nonprofit. It has somehow to be the spiritual, and always take that 10% for the spiritual off first. Comes off the top. Cream off the top.
And you teach them that when they're very young, do you?
Right. Mm-hmm. And you teach them, you put the money in their hands. You know, you've got to have hand work here. There's mm-hmm. so many nerves in the hands. You've got to have some kind of interaction here with the hands. Mm. So let's say, for instance, you're going to a store and they're going to get a new piece of clothing, put the money in their hand. They go up to the counter and they give the money to the cashier to pay for the item. Mm-hmm. And then the cashier gives the change back to them, which they in turn give back to you. So it's very important. They must feel money. They must see it and feel it. Again, the passbook for their savings account is in their room. They can pick it up. They can see it. You've got to return the hands and the feet to the world, and the brain will follow.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, actually. Now, we're going to have to end soon, and I don't want to because this book is so rich, Children of the Fifth World.
Oh, it goes into everything.
Well,
timetables, the great shifting.
And you go into a whole lot of the world's global economic doodah, talking about money, about who buys who off and how it runs. And I think that's,
you know,
really
we got to be honest, dear.
Yes,
we've got
do.
To be honest.
It's helpful.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's the way we're going to be able to live in this world and help our children, is to help them see the world as it really is, not as we prefer it to be, or, you know, entertainment tells us it's this or that, or the politician says it's this or that. We got to see the world as it really is.
And also the way you've described these kids and so on, helping them develop their own integrity is kind of a morality base as well, isn't it? I keep going back to that.
Well, I give as many links and suggestions as I possibly can.
Your book is amazing, and so are you. And I thank you so much for your work in the world. I know your near-death studies have really impacted me through the years. I've learned a lot from that. And I think a lot of people do. It's really.
Well, I invite everybody to to read my latest, the summary of all my near-death work, which is called simply Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, because in that book I reveal what I never could before. You know, never could. Because, you know, the peer group and the pressure with research, there's some things you can say, some things you can't say. I finally decided to heck with it. So I reveal it all. And then from chapter 16 and on, I pull the rug out.
Oh, wonderful.
I really pull the rug out, and I show that near-death experiences are not any kind of anomaly. Rather, they are part of the larger genre of transformations of consciousness. Then I show what transformations of consciousness are, why we have them, and where they lead us.
Wonderful. I'm going to have to get hold of that book. Then maybe you'll come back and talk about it.
Well, sure.
We would love that. This is PMH Atwater, and the book is Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness. And woohoo, there's a lot of big changes coming up, and we want to be a part of it, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not too old.
No way.
Because I really believe in everything I love so much is about our potential for transformation, which is essentially what you're talking about with different faces, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what we have to talk about.
Right. Thank you so much for being on Paradigm Shifters and for being a paradigm shifter. And many blessings to all of you who have listened. And thank you again.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.